Welcome to the Federalist Society's Practice Group podcast. The following podcast, hosted by the Federalist Society's Federalism and Separation of Powers and Environmental Law and Property Rights Practice Groups, was recorded on Tuesday, October 20th, 2015, during a live Courthouse Steps telephone conference call held exclusively for Federalist Society members.
Welcome to the Federalist Society's Practice Group telephone conference call on last week's oral argument in Federal Energy Regulatory Commission v. Electric Power Supply Association. The first case this term to touch on the issue of Chevron deference. My name is Will Courtney, and I'm the Deputy Director of Practice Groups here at the Federalist Society. As always, please note that all expressions of opinion are those of the experts on today's call. Also, this call is being recorded for use as a podcast in the future. Today, we welcome our expert, Eric Jaffe. More complete bios were provided to you in the notice of the call, so I'll stop here and preserve more time for his presentation, followed by your questions. Mr. Jaffe, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Thank you to the Federal Society for having me on in this edition of the Courthouse Steps series. Today we're going to be talking about FERC versus the Electric Power Supply Association and the associated case Enernoc versus Electric Power Supply Association, which was argued last Wednesday, October 14th. I attended that argument, and I guess I should provide an early warning that I also had a brief in that case. A brief in support of FERC, which is not my usual side of events, but nonetheless was here, on behalf of the Microgrid Resources Coalition, basically people who sell demand response and hence like the FERC rule. Just so you know where I'm coming from, though generally I try to be neutral. So the issue in this case, the main issue in this case, is whether or not FERC can set prices for something called demand response, which is basically to pay for an agreement not to consume electricity. And I say this in the passive voice, an agreement. I don't say who it's with, because that agreement can be with a variety of people. It can be an agreement with a utility, where the utility says, I promise to reduce demand when you need me to, for a certain amount of money. That agreement can be with a third party, where the third party says, I will go around and aggregate a bunch of big users and small users, and when you tell us, we will drop our demand by a certain amount. Or that agreement could be directly with an end user, a large end user. For example, large universities such as Princeton, large manufacturing companies can often control their electric consumption in a way that it can be altered on demand, perhaps by resorting to stored energy, perhaps by kicking in conservation methods that they would not otherwise apply, et cetera, dimming their lights, things like that, who can control their demand. And FERC has passed a rule that says that in these big wholesale markets where large quantities of energy are bought and sold that are run by these regional entities, those regional entities can allow demand response people to come in and bid as if they were providing energy. So it draws a mostly an equivalent between one, you know, megawatt worth of reducing consumption for electricity as being largely the same as 1 megawatt of producing electricity that would otherwise meet such consumption. And FERC has rules saying you can come into these auction markets. It also has rules about how the cost of that service would be recouped in other rates. And the argument is that at the end of the day, in doing so, FERC is actually regulating retail transactions, not wholesale transactions. It is regulating transactions with the consumers of electricity, not with the bulk purchasers or the producers of electricity. And that's what the whole fight is. And the FERC statute says that FERC has jurisdiction over the sale of electric energy at wholesale and over any practice affecting wholesale rates. But it does not have authority, it does not have jurisdiction over any other sale of electric energy, which everyone understands to mean retail sales. So that's the issue, and FERC has largely taken the position that, look, all we do is regulate wholesale prices that get paid for a certain service on the wholesale market, and how those prices get recouped through other wholesale rates, And the fact that occasionally an end user may bid into the market doesn't make it a retail sale. It's still a wholesale sale or something affecting a wholesale sale. The other side, EPSA, ably represented by Paul Clements, has made the point that, look, you're basically paying customers not to consume electricity, and that is regulating a retail sale. Admittedly, regulating it in a way that deters it, but nonetheless, you're telling a retail customer, don't buy that electricity at retail. We'll pay you not to buy the electricity at retail. Both sides have, there's some facial appeal to both versions of it. I obviously agree with the FERC's version of it, but I think more importantly what you care about, hopefully care about, is what the justices thought. And the justices out of the box, so Solicitor General Verrilli went first on behalf of FERC and was quickly met by a lot of pushback from Justice Scalia, who was wondering about, where the effect is so direct upon retail consumption. It's not as if it's an indirect effect, but in fact you're potentially paying a retail customer to not make that retail transaction. That they're regulating wholesale prices through the means of regulating retail customers, and that goes beyond FERC's abilities. It's an ultra vires as to FERC's jurisdiction because it reaches into the realm of other sales of electricity, i.e. retail sales. And as much as General Verrilli pushed back on this, I think Justice Scalia was very firm in his suggestion that this is a means of affecting wholesale rates that goes too far and impinges upon what is reserved to the states. Chief Justice Roberts stepped in, I think, also on this side of the fence with an example that we'll get back to later. But the example was, what if you stood outside McDonald's and offered people $5 not to go in and buy a hamburger? And in his view, if the hamburger costs $2 and I stand outside and offer you $5 not to go in, you're going in now, the hamburger now costs $7. We'll talk about whether that analogy makes sense, but that's the Chief Justice's view of this, is that FERC is basically paying people not to buy electricity, which effectively increases the price, the retail price of electricity. And I think Justice Scalia probably found this analogy similarly persuasive. The answer to this, General Verrilli's answer to this is, look, we're not actually paying them anything. We're just saying that we will allow them to come into a wholesale market and get paid by third parties, and those third parties can then recoup those costs. But at the end of the day, it is simply something that is built into the retail price. The fact that it gets people to come in and want to sell at retail at wholesale rather than at retail, that's just a consequence, but it still affects the retail prices in a very direct fashion, even if it has an indirect effect on retail prices. So we're directly talking about wholesale prices. Even if it has an indirect effect on retail prices, that's still within FERC's jurisdiction because, of course, anything at the wholesale level has an indirect effect on retail prices. Chief Justice Roberts, I think, got right to the point and says, so what's the limiting principle? At some point, directly regulating retail prices would also affect wholesale prices. You can't do that. That's forbidden. And is there any line beyond that that says you are monkeying around with the retail market too much and in too direct a fashion? And unfortunately, there is really no great line that was ever suggested by the litigants, particularly by General Verrilli. At the end of the day, General Verrilli made, I thought, an interesting point. They said, look, we're not saying that we oust state jurisdiction over the retail sales, and that at some point a state could tell its retail customers, you may not sell demand response on the wholesale market. You can only sell demand response to your local utility. And apparently that's some states, I guess, do that, so that demand response is mediated only through the local utility. And he seemed to think that that dealt with any lingering federalism concerns on the sort of periphery or penumbra of this otherwise, sales-based divide. The only other justice who asked questions at the front end, there was a brief question by Justice Kennedy about whether or not this is luring retail customers into the wholesale market, which is sort of echoing some of the argument that was made in the courts below and in the briefs. And then Justice Sotomayor, who sort of pointed out that there's no text in the statute that denies FERC the authority and that we should just give them deference on the scope of authority here, given that they are operating directly through the wholesale market, regardless of whether or not outside participants and retail customers ultimately come in to join the wholesale market. So I think we got a signal from Justice Sotomayor that she's leaning more towards FERC. We got some questions from Justice Kennedy, but it's not clear where he goes yet. On the Carter Phillips, Carter Phillips then next argued for some of the private parties supporting FERC, and he basically said, look, this is fine. We're not directly regulating retail prices, and the fact that there's an effect on retail prices doesn't matter. It's a tariff that is filed for the wholesale market. All we're doing is creating demand via the wholesale market, and any indirect effects don't go beyond FERC's power. I thought it was a very straightforward argument there, and he talked a little bit about why the particular price that FERC set, so there's a second question on whether they set the right price, why that price was good, and talked a little bit about the economics behind that price. I think that's a secondary issue, and I'll get to that at the end, but I don't think it's anywhere near as important as the jurisdictional issue. The one other thing I thought Carter Phillips mentioned that was interesting but didn't get a lot of play was that this demand response service, or whatever you want to call it, at the wholesale level helps protect the entire grid from things like brownouts and other disruptions to the grid. The reason that's important is because it sort of triggers a different part of FERC's jurisdiction. It's jurisdiction over transmission. And if the idea is to protect the grid from things like brownouts, there may be another basis for FERC jurisdiction. I didn't see any of the justices biting on that theory, though the ones who were quiet perhaps will pick that up. There were no questions in this first instance from Justice Ginsburg at all, or Justice Kagan, and of course not from Justice Thomas on this either. This is wouldn't provoke his interest in asking a question, I wouldn't think. Former Solicitor General Clement then came up for the petitioners, and I think did a really spectacular job. Was very persuasive, though. Some of the things he said may not have been entirely accurate once we get to General Verrilli's rebuttal. But in any event, his point was, at the end of the day, they are going too directly through retail customers. They can regulate the wholesale market all they want, but if the way you're regulating the wholesale market is by bribing retail customers to behave in one way or another way, that's really part of the retail market and retail sales. You're encouraging or discouraging retail sales in a very direct fashion, and that's beyond FERC's power. He gave an interesting example about Walmart not being able to come into the wholesale market, even though they're a huge consumer, not being able to buy at wholesale. The trouble with that example, of course, is that according to General Verrilli, it's not true that Walmart, in fact, does in many states buy at the wholesale market through a captive entity that then distributes strictly to Walmart stores. So it was an interesting example and an interesting debate about whether a large retail customer is really a retail customer or is a participant in the wholesale market, and the answer seems to be both. And the way it is reconciled, at least according to General Verrilli, is that a state can ban Walmart from doing that if it so chooses, but if a state permits large customers to buy at wholesale, then their behavior then becomes wholesale behavior. And if a state says you can only buy at retail, then it's regulated as a retail sale. Anyway, back to Paul Clement. He, I think, made a fairly strong argument as to why this is the mechanism of affecting wholesale rates in this instance goes through retail customers and why that might be too far. I don't think he quite answered the issue of all you're really doing is setting a retail rate regardless of who can or can't come in to the market. But that's the fight. That's the fight at the end of the day, and I think it's a hard fight. Finally, I think Clement made a very good point that there's a very different way of looking at the problem, that FERC is looking at the problem as involving a line between sales and non-sales, that the only thing FERC can't do is deal with retail sales. But the fact that it deals with behavior by retail people, non-sale behavior by retail people, is perfectly fine. So it's a sale, non-sale line, and the restriction on their behavior only goes to something that literally is a retail sale, but that anything that affects wholesale rates is within their purview. Paul Clement would make the argument, and his clients would make the argument, and have made the argument, that in fact the line should be between wholesale and retail, and that the sale distinction is somewhat disingenuous because paying someone not to engage in a sale and pretending that you're not regulating the sale is a little much to stomach. And there's some emotive truth to that, and perhaps even some logical truth. If I pay you not to engage in a sale, have I regulated the sale? I don't know. That's a metaphysical question that the court will have to grapple with. While Clement was arguing, the two other justices became a little more active. Stephen Breyer became active, and in his usual mode, provided a long and complicated question that I don't think many in the court understood. And at the end of the day, even Justice Breyer suggested that perhaps Clement just ignore the question because it had rambled on a little too long. But the gist of it, I think, was, are they stealing retail customers away from utilities when the utilities could instead encourage those retail customers to do demand response that would help the utility? So the utility in the retail pricing could provide incentives for demand response, incentives to conserve energy, and instead the wholesale market is stealing those customers away such that the retail market can no longer do this. And that was his concern, is that there's effectively competition between the wholesale market and the retail market for demand response services. Will a large consumer of energy sell their demand response services on the wholesale market, or will they sell it on the retail market? And that really sort of determines who gets to regulate it. And I think Justice Breyer's questions ultimately were concerned with that problem and how that interaction played out. Justice Kagan suggested that the implication of the petitioner's position was that FERC could take no action on demand response. And I thought Clement's answer to that was quite interesting. He said, no, FERC can always pay utilities to institute demand response programs. What he objects to is FERC paying end users. The utility, which is the traditional purchaser of wholesale power and seller of retail power, Clement thinks that entity can indeed turn around and sell demand response into the wholesale market and buy demand response from customers. So acting as the traditional intermediary in transactions, bridging the gap between wholesale and retail transactions. The fascinating point of that suggestion, that is the limit of FERC's authority, tells you a lot about where his clients are coming from and what their interests are. So his clients are public utilities and some power generators. And the notion that they can be the aggregators, basically, of demand response services from their customers is fascinating, because the people it cuts out are the customers from going to the wholesale market directly, but more importantly, non-utility aggregators. There are lots of other companies out there that do exactly what Clement has suggested, which is aggregate demand response from end users and then sell that aggregated response up on the wholesale market, serving in exactly that intermediary role that Clement suggests the utilities can serve in and that FERC can regulate. And so you sort of see where the economic fight now is, which is it's to discourage these third parties and drive all demand response through the utilities, both so that they can seek rent on that and make the profit from the interchange, and also so that states can get their piece of the action there, presumably. Which I think is an interesting just sidelight as the argument developed to figure out really what the interests here are. So Justice Kagan continued to ask about whether retail actors can still bid into the wholesale market and does that make it a retail transaction. She touched again upon the Walmart question, and Clement again raised the Walmart issue, and it's unclear where she goes with that. The final bit of this discussion, before I move on to Verrilli's reply, was there was a little bit of discussion with Clement about whether the price was set properly or whether it was arbitrary and capricious. And quite frankly, that was just a discussion about whose economists were right and whose economists were wrong, and whether or not FERC gave an adequate answer to the economists who would have preferred a different pricing mechanism, even if FERC had jurisdiction. I quite frankly don't think that issue is going anywhere. And if it is going anywhere, it wasn't because of oral argument. Folks are going to go back and read the 5 or 6 paragraphs that FERC wrote about this and decide whether they think that constitutes sufficiently rational consideration of the question to get Chevron deference? My guess is the answer to that will be yes, if they ever reach that question, if they find jurisdiction. So that was the tail end, and that got a little bit of traction, I think, with the Chief Justice and with Justice Kagan asking some questions about that. But again, I don't think that's going to go very far. And Kennedy, Justice Kennedy as well, talked about that a touch. So finally, I thought Verrilli's reply was quite interesting, and I think perhaps the best part of his argument, where he pointed out that this obviously affects wholesale rates, that there's literally nothing in the statute that forbids FERC from doing this, and so that at most you would be creating some artificial line that says effects can't mean everything, so where do I draw the line? The court would be making that up. And then he pointed out, I thought, quite forcefully and quite effectively, that Walmart, in fact, does buy on the wholesale market through a captive entity that distributes just to Walmart folks. And consequently, this notion of a bright line between retail customers and wholesale customers is false, and that FERC gets to regulate whatever happens on the wholesale market, regardless of who comes to buy on that market. And that if states don't like retail customers buying on the wholesale market, that they can ban that. And that's fine, but from FERC's perspective, they're just regulating what goes on in the market. So that's the summary. That's the sort of synopsis of what went on. I'll talk for a moment or two about what I think about that, and then I'll give you guys all a chance to ask questions. So I'll just sort of give a couple opinions, and then I think right after that we'll open it up for questions. Do we have the instructions on how people can queue up for questions if they have any?
Yes. While Mr. Jaffe finishes his remarks, we'll go ahead and open up the line for questions. In a moment, we'll all hear a prompt that will say the floor mode is on. After that, to request the floor, enter star, then pound.
So my two... So my 2 cents on all of this is that as a predictive matter, it's pretty hard to call. I think it's fairly clear that Justice Sotomayor will support FERC. I think it's a harder call about Justice Breyer and Justice Kagan, though I think they probably, net-net, I would lean in that direction, though not very definitively. Justice Kennedy, a little bit harder. I think I might lean in the other direction, though I think he's also somewhere in the middle and could easily be moved to the FERC side of this equation. I think Justice Scalia is quite hostile to FERC on this issue, as is the Chief Justice. Unclear where Justice Thomas comes out on this question. And so this is a very close call. It could easily end up being 4-4. It could easily, end up being in FERC's favor. I have a slightly harder time imagining a substantial win for the challengers to FERC, but it's not outside the realm of possibility. Now, that being said, I actually think this case is spectacularly easy. I think FERC is totally right on this. I don't think it's even close. They are telling a wholesale auction market that it must let people come in and bid. They're not, that's all they're doing. They're regulating, the direct regulation operates on the wholesale auction marketeer, and it tells that marketeer, this is what you have to pay as a rate, it's a wholesale rate, and this is what you can recoup for that payment and the means in which you can recoup it through your other wholesale rates. I understand that this has an effect on retail customers, it has effect on retail rates, and it might even induce retail customers to be wholesale suppliers of demand response services. That being said, FERC's jurisdiction extends to anything affecting retail sales and wholesale sales and wholesale rates. And that is easily well within that. And the limit on their jurisdiction only goes to actually regulating a retail sale. And as far as I can tell, they do not regulate retail sales unless you take the Walmart example, where Walmart buys for its own consumption on the wholesale market. To the extent that that's true, this is an easy fix. FERC can simply say the only people who can sell demand response into the wholesale market are aggregators. And whether that aggregator is a utility, as Paul Clement suggests, or whether that aggregator is some third party competing with utilities for demand response services, they're not retail customers. They may deal with retail customers, but they themselves are not retail customers. And so if that's the only implication of the you can't deal with retail customers directly, this fight is somewhat pointless. since there are not a lot of Walmarts in the world that try to participate directly in the demand response, direct demand response bids into wholesale markets. So that's my take on it. I think this fight is sort of odd and silly, particularly given that the government concedes that retail customers can still be regulated by states, even to the point of forbidding them from selling demand response services at all, or requiring them to sell demand response services to their local utility instead of elsewhere. Given that, I don't see any problem at all here. But the justices apparently seem to find more problem with it, and that's why you have a horse race or a boxing match or whatever your favorite sports analogy is for things that you don't know the outcome of. So with that said, any questions?
We're still looking for a question here. Everyone on the line, if you hit star and the pound key, you will be – oh, there it is. We'll go ahead and go to our first questioner.
Hello? Yes?
It's David Emerson, Society member in Berkeley, California. I'd be interested in knowing whether there was any, I guess, kind of discussion of whether the one-size-fits-all FERC approach was discussed or briefed and argued versus a more, since this is the federal society, a more regional or state-level solution, and whether or not the FERC's assertion of retail control would undermine the state's own ability to fashion its own solutions for this type of issue, the demand response issue.
Sure. So one thing to keep in mind is that this rule only applies to the auction markets, which do not cover all of the states. Many states do not participate in an auction market and have their own regional grids that are separate from these markets. And so in those states, this rule would have no impact at all, no effect at all, and those states do their own thing. The second thing is, according to General Verrilli, any state that doesn't want its consumers to become demand response sellers can forbid them from doing that. So at some level, the point was that states can opt out of this, that any given state, through its own regulation of its retail customers, could opt out of this and instead only allow them to sell demand response back to their own utility, which then would be a state by state or utility by utility, public service commission by public service commission question about how utilities compensate consumers for demand response, for dropping demand when it's really needed that they drop it, sort of on-demand reduction in consumption. So in that sense, I'm not sure there's really a lot of a conflict here. FERC is trying to set up a rule that provides a strong economic incentive, obviously, to come into the wholesale market, but any state could decide that they want to shift the economic incentives and, in fact, erect legal barriers that sort of force consumers back through the retail chain, as it were, increasing and decreasing their consumption and getting paid or not paid or having to pay for that straight through their utility. So that's my sense of how it got discussed. Obviously, that's the government's position that states could just opt out, which some of the justices found a little peculiar, that since when does a federal agency decide that its jurisdiction is subject to state opt-out, which is a little peculiar, admittedly, but I suppose that's sort of the consequence of having different entities regulate different parts of the market stream, wholesale to retail. So obviously regulating one or regulating the other can have secondary effects in either direction, up or down. My general sense is that there are states – so this type of wholesale demand response purchase has been going on for a while. This is just dealing with the pricing of it. But my general sense is that lots of the people who sell demand response are, in fact, utilities. And the way they get the demand response that they bid into the wholesale market is by cutting deals with their customers that say, let us put a smart meter in your house so that when we need it, we'll drop your air conditioning by a little bit, or we'll drop your electricity consumption by a little bit. Let us put in a smart thermostat that will respond to signals during high demand periods. So I think that these two things have been going on simultaneously with some state innovation. The real big issue here, I think the economic issue that's lurking underneath all of this, is that FERC set a very high price for demand response. And so it is a strong inducement for people to provide these demand response services, which in turn reduces the demand for electric power. And the people whose ox is being gored by that are the folks who produce electric power. And sometimes that's a utility, sometimes that's a third party. But at the end of the day, during high periods of demand, the price of electric power on the spot market goes very high. And folks make a lot of money on that. And if you can increase demand response, you would lower that upper limit of pricing quite a bit. And I think that's the economic ox that's being gored here. If the price were lower, I think everyone would agree that both states and the federal version of this could coexist, and there would be incentives in both directions to balance the interests. Does that answer the question? Hopefully that answered some of the question. I'm not sure if I answered all the nuances of it, but I'm happy to do more. One other thing I should mention, if there are any other questions, please chime in, is that, of course, the court just the other day granted another pair of FERC cases, CPV Maryland versus PPL Energy and Hughes versus PPL Energy, which deals with state attempts to subsidize energy production and thereby affect wholesale price, the price at which that energy will be sold on the wholesale market. And I think it's not the same issue, but it's sort of the flip side of the issue is how far can the state go in either regulating retail sales or, more importantly, regulating the construction and subsidization of power-generating facilities when that affects wholesale prices and may even be intended to affect wholesale prices. And I think, given that they've now granted these cases, I imagine that any decision in the EPSA case will they'll have to look at them side by side and make sure whatever principle on the scope of effects that they lay down will have rational consequences in both pairs of cases. So I imagine, therefore, these cases, you may see a slight delay and have these cases come out closer in time to each other so that the justices can think about what impact any decision in EPSA would have in the PPL case, the PPL cases. Just something to keep in mind and think about. Not quite the same issue, but it is indeed the other side of the coin, as it were, or part of the other side of the coin. Any other questions?
We do have one more question. Before we proceed to that, though, I'd like to remind everyone to visit fedsoc.org/teleforum to check our schedule of upcoming calls. Our next call is tomorrow at 2 p.m. We'll be discussing the new book, The Constitutional Foundations of Intellectual Property, A Natural Rights Perspective. You can view our full schedule at fedsoc.org/teleforum. Additionally, if you would like to join our question queue, please hit star and the pound key. We'll now go to our next question.
Yes, hello?
Yeah, hi. I have a sort of sideways question about the case of significance, which is, it's not completely evident to me why Don Verrilli argued this case himself. And I'm wondering if you have some speculation about why he thought this was the sort of, you know, significant, high stakes, or politically salient case that justified having the SG himself do the argument.
Sure. I think that when the question in play is whether to put some sort of limit on the phrase effects, right? So FERC's jurisdiction extends to anything affecting wholesale rates, as well as wholesale sales themselves, obviously. But the critical, the broad piece of the jurisdictional grant is anything affecting wholesale rates. And where the question is whether to pare that concept back from what we traditionally think of as the very broad language of affecting. Think of affecting commerce. Think of affecting pension plans and ERISA, you know, things like that. Benefit plans, rather. That the implications of a decision like this extend both to a lot of things FERC could do, but quite frankly to a lot of things other entities could do with language, similar language in their statutes. And particularly in the energy area, however, I think that if you suddenly carve out a much bigger space for the states to regulate energy that is not controlled by FERC, and more importantly, that cannot be preempted by FERC, that has huge implications in the energy market, both electricity and natural gas. I think that's why he stepped in, is not because demand response itself is necessarily the be-all and end-all, though I think it's a significant piece of the energy puzzle, certainly, and figuring out, you know, how to best encourage that and how to pay for that and who gets the rent from that, which is really what I think is going on here, is billions of dollars, many, many billions, hundreds of billions of dollars that we're talking about. But more importantly, I think the spin-off implications for other aspects of energy policy and energy regulation are potentially huge if, for example, the court came up with a very narrow conception of what affects wholesale rates. And like I said, I don't even think this case is close. I think FERC has said you can pay X as part of your wholesale purchase for demand response, and you can recoup the cost of that payment in your other wholesale prices. That is about as close a direct connection between regulating wholesale transactions and wholesale rates as I can think of. And if that goes too far, imagine what other parts of energy policy probably go too far, and then all of a sudden you have 50 states regulating energy as 50 independent sovereigns. I think that's probably why General Verrilli stepped in, is that they were worried about the spin-off implications of this, not that they were worried about the pricing issues and conservation issues on this case itself.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We do have one more question that we'll go to now. If you'd like to join our queue, please do hit star and the pound key.
Yes, hello, go ahead.
Hey, Eric, it's Don Falk from Oakland. Nice presentation.
Hey, Don. Nice.
Hey, well, I got to take issue with a couple things. I really actually have one big question and one little question. The big question is the position that Verrilli asserted seemed to be without limits, and I'm not sure what you're saying is the right answer has any limits either. If the feds can regulate anything that affects wholesale prices, well, retail demand affects wholesale prices. If you set the price too high, yeah, and the feds think that not enough energy is being consumed and it's depressing the wholesale market, why can't they tell the, you know, say, issue a regulation that affects retail prices in that way? It ultimately affects wholesale prices. And I didn't see Verrilli offering any limits at all, you know, setting aside whether this regulation may be justified one way or the other. The other part that is less important, it's more important if they actually did anything, but I agree with you, they probably won't. I understood the last piece, the economist challenge, to be more a State Farm reasoned decision-making challenge than a Chevron challenge, whether they had done the right things rather than whether their conclusion was ultimately acceptable under Chevron, which I think is, when it comes to setting the rate, if they have the power to do so, I agree it's a pretty easy case. I also think that six paragraphs is probably enough for reasoned decision making, but that's a issue of, I think, broader significance. There's a lot fewer reasoned decision making cases up there that have any depth to them. I don't think this is going to be one of that small group, but I wondered if you had any comments on either the limits or the court's tentative steps back into the details of administrative law.
Sure. Let me take them backwards, because I think the first one requires a longer answer. The second one, I think six paragraphs is probably enough to punch the ticket of, yes, we thought about it. And then the question is whether or not their answer had a sufficient substantive relationship with the arguments that were being made, and whether they sort of did a decent job of thinking about the particulars. Look, when I argue against agencies, which is most of the time, I think they have some greater obligation to sort of be rational and make good arguments, not just any arguments. I just don't think the court's going to dive into that is the problem. I'm sure that economists can have good fights about why one side or the other's answer was dumb or non-responsive. I didn't see a lot of stomach for the court to go into that level of detail. I mean, Stephen Breyer ultimately sort of said, well, so you want me to read this report and these five paragraphs and that expert witness. Okay, I'll go do that. And I think at the end of the day, they're all going to go do that, and they're all going to read it, and their heads are going to spin, and they're going to say, wow, this is complicated stuff, and we're justices, and our clerks, maybe they're smart, maybe they're not, but this is FERC's business, not ours, and we're not jumping into this economic fight. That's my gut. I could see Scalia jumping into that economic fight. I just can't see a lot of the other ones doing it, is my sense of it. On the question of where's the line, that obviously retail sales affect wholesale prices, and so where's the line? I think Verrilli's line, at least, was we can't directly regulate a retail sale. And yes, retail sales do affect wholesale prices, but I can't say you have to have a lower rate or you have to have a higher rate for, to your customers. Can't say it, not because it doesn't affect it, but because there's a carve-out, because there's an express carve-out in the statute that says you can do anything affecting wholesale sales except retail sales. And so that would be, I think Clement was exactly right, is that the government's position is a sale, no sale line, and Clement's position is a retail wholesale line. And obviously the statute has both words in it, so it's a hard question. But I think there would be at least some limit. I think the question that most goes to the point you're making, Don, is the Chief Justice's $5 outside of McDonald's example. Is so when I offer you $5 not to buy the hamburger, am I really not regulating a retail sale? Am I really not doing anything to that retail sale? And there's an intuitive sense that that's correct. And the government's answer to that was, you are certainly affecting the retail sale, but you're not changing the retail price. Because even though you're creating an opportunity cost that discourages me from paying the retail price, you're not actually changing the price of the hamburger. You may be changing the economic cost of the hamburger, but you're not changing the price of the hamburger, and that's the sale. And to my mind, the analogy there would be something like, you know, I choose to become a school teacher at a lower salary, but I could be an investment banker at 10 times that salary. So does that mean my salary as a school teacher is actually negative $1 million? I don't think so. My salary is $40,000, and I could be making $1,040,000. I choose to forego that. It doesn't change my salary. It just changes the abstract economic cost to me.
Yeah. What about two things. One, it seems to me, at least to be historically, we're sort of turning the energy regulation system on its head, and you know maybe that's been accomplished by Congress over the years, maybe not. But FERC and its predecessor existed because there was this gap in energy regulation. There was this piece that no one could really properly touch, and so the Federal Power Agency got the Federal Power Administration got the power to regulate the interstate, whatever that means. And granted, these are very woolly concepts. But now it seems that there's sort of a, and you even expressed this, sort of plenary federal power with carve-outs is the way you and certainly Verrilli look at it. And that strikes me from a point of view of federalism and history to be a fairly significant change. And if that's so, and if your analogy on the pricing is right, why couldn't FERC say anyone who consumes more than X is deemed to be a wholesale consumer and will be fined for all consumption over X megawatts?
I mean, on the latter one,
why couldn't they do that? That would affect the price. That's just a fine. It's not a, it's just an incentive not to exceed a certain threshold.
Sure. On the last bit, I think that would just be a disingenuous, on FERC's part, disingenuous view of what a wholesale purchaser is, right? I mean, I think we have at least a decent concept of what wholesale versus retail purchases and sales are. One is for your own consumption, one is for other people's, for resale. And so they couldn't just change, you know, pretend that, well, no, I'm not saying they wouldn't try. Believe me, I've watched agencies try. But I don't think they'd succeed in redefining wholesale to mean not wholesale. And as to the federalism point, I might well agree with you that that's where we've come. I'm strictly speaking to the statutory point, which may well have moved substantially in the direction of a national energy markets and national energy regulation and away from wholesale markets. I think some of the reason for that was expressed a little bit by Verrilli, but more by some of the amicus briefs, which is that this is to some degree about, you know, capping, reducing those top-tier prices at periods of high demand, but it's also just about balancing supply and demand so that the load doesn't bring the system down. And at least in talking to sort of folks who deal with transmission issues, the sense I get is that a lot of this demand response is because we just can't handle meeting that demand by jamming more energy through the system. And that at the end of the day, you got to cut the demand down to balance it regionally and over these large transmission lines. And maybe that's just something that individual states can't manage on their own, that has to be done from, if not a national perspective, at least a regional perspective, like in these regional organizations and these ISOs. That's my guess. But once again, I'm not taking a position one way or the other upon whether this is a good evolution or bad evolution of energy policy, other than it seems to be what the statute says, and that may be why the statute says it, whether the federalism concerns should have argued for a narrower grant of jurisdiction to FERC. To me, that's a congressional issue more than a legal question on how one interprets an existing statute, the existing statute as it's written. But I agree with you. It certainly does seem to have moved very – the pendulum has indeed swung very much towards national regulation of more and more and away from local regulation of such things. Hopefully that answered everything.
Okay. Thanks. That's great.
Yeah. For those of you on the line, Don and I go back a long way. I'm sure he would tell me if I had given a terrible answer or just an answer he didn't like, or he would not be
shocked. The only thing I didn't like was the notion that FERC being disingenuous was something that A, wouldn't happen, and B, wouldn't get four votes
in
the Supreme Court.
Oh, no, no. I believe it would happen. Like I said, I'm usually on the other side of these agencies. It's not that I place any great faith in the power of administrators and their attorneys to twist things around. It's just that every now and again I find myself in the extremely distasteful position of agreeing with them. It happens once in a while. It's not often. I try to avoid it. But there you have it.
Well, we have no pending questions on the line. If you want to get in a last question, please hit star and the pound key. While we wait to see if anybody has a final question that needs answering, do you have any closing comments, Mr. Jaffe?
No, my closing thought, I think, stems off of one of the earlier questions, which is, you know, how do we deal with a statute that has broad language like effects, when everyone understands that in very tightly interrelated markets like this, everything affects everything. We see this in the Commerce example, in Commerce Clause example. We see this in ERISA. We see this here. And, you know, at some point it would be nice if Congress just stopped using such ridiculously open-ended language and came up with something a little tighter that told us where the line was. And that way, if they really meant anything except for X, Y, and Z, then we would know that they meant anything. And if they really wanted a line somewhere in the middle, it would be nice for legislators to work on that and tell us that that's in fact what they mean. Because the court seems to have case after case dealing with, is it a direct effect? Is it an indirect effect? Is there a nexus? Is it too much? Does federalism check the effect? And that's just, you know, asking them to pick a line out of a hat, basically, when Congress could solve this problem for us. And it would be nice if they did occasionally. That's my last thought. Blame Congress. Or Canada.
Well, on behalf of the Federal Society, I want to thank you, Mr. Jaffe, and also you, our audience. Please do join us tomorrow at 2 p.m., but until that next call, we are adjourned. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this Practice Group podcast. For materials related to this podcast and other Federalist Society multimedia, please visit the Federalist Society's website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.